one, a two, and a tee, goal!
This is fun! The FU Network.
For he's a jolly good fellow, for he's a jolly good fellow, for he's a jolly good fellow, let's all say on the bus.
Hello and welcome to Mensplaining. I'm Stephen Kersner. This is the show where it's men talking to men about how to be men in 2020. And this is not about male tears. It's not about scapegoating. It's not about talking about how we have it, you know, so unfairly. It's just men talking to men about our experiences, our thoughts. And you could say that this is cucksplaining in the terms of right-wing people, because we're not here to carry a flag for men's rights activists. We're just here talking as a bunch of guys, talking about our experiences, our thoughts, and our feelings. Yes, feelings. Men have them, and it's okay to talk about them. So today we are going to be talking about how men talk to other men, as opposed to how they talk to women. There is a difference in the rhythms, the patterns, and the comfort level. There's almost a bit of code switching that goes on when you talk between a general group and just talking to a bunch of guys. And we'll get into that. But first, we'll go to our, before I introduce the panel, introduce our producer, Hafiz Noorani, who's going to give us sort of a rundown on the topic. Hafiz?
Hey, how you doing there, Steve?
Good, good. So let us know.
In terms of this topic, how we're going to go about it, essentially, you know, when we're guys, we have our own lingo. We chat our own way with each other. There's, you know, levels that you can take a conversation with a guy in terms of how much you can razz them or joke with them. My question is that different with men in how we discuss that with each other versus, you know, how we might discuss that with women? Do women have their own sort of internal lingo that they use? Is this a good thing? Is it a bad thing?
Or is it just a thing?
Is this something that's always been there?
Yeah, it's just a thing. Okay. Our panel today, we've got Andrew Willis, Andy from Andyland Radio. How are you doing?
Doing damn good, baby.
Okay, good. We're always glad to have you. Aaron Seal is a entrepreneur and a conservative activist, but sort of the small C conservative, the kind that three quarters of the country wish would actually be the kind of conservative party that was out there.
Hello, Aaron, thank you. In the context of how you introduced the show, that makes me look a little bit better.
Okay. We've got, of course, the host of the critically acclaimed and well-deserved acclaim. This is Van Color Podcast. Mo Amir. Hello. How are you, Mo?
Hey, Steven. You're too kind. Thanks for having me on.
No, I'm not kind enough. your show is terrific. And joining us this week for the first time is Chris Hamilton. Chris, you're out in Nanaimo. So tell us a little bit about you, because everybody's met everybody else before on different shows. Tell us a little bit about you. You're in the music business, right?
Yeah, so I'm an MC engineer and music producer who goes by the name of Illtone. Currently stationed on Vancouver Island, but I spent about 8 years over in Vancouver, just immersing myself in the music community over there, did lots of touring back and forth across Canada, out in Europe, so on and so forth. I released a record on Urbnet Records, which is a fairly household Canadian hip-hop label called Bringing the Hope Back several years ago, and have done some self-release projects ever since. I did graduate from PAVI, Pacific Audiovisual Institute in Vancouver, with a certificate in audio engineering and music production. And these days I kind of lay low. I dabble in the comedy as well. I do some comedy videos and sorts of things like that. And yeah, that's the gist of it, I guess. So thanks for having me on there, Stephen.
You just left out what you had for dinner last night.
Sorry, I can go for 45 more minutes if you'd like. Us rappers love talking about ourselves.
Well, you guys got the very well-developed jaw muscles. But that's an example of kind of what we're talking about, the way guys talk to other guys. Because you knew that I was jabbing you, but you knew there was no enmity there. That it's all, you know, and I think that it's not unique to men. But let's hear what other people think. Mo, do you find yourself talking differently with men than with a mixed audience, or if women are the sole audience?
Yeah, to be honest, I find myself talking differently depending on the social circle and my relationships within those circles. So when it comes to my group of guys that, you know, I've been friends with from high school, we almost have our own dialect to a certain degree because we've grown up with each other. We know each other's histories and each other's pasts. So, yeah, we talk in a way that maybe other people wouldn't understand. With other close friends, again, you almost have a different dialect with them, and that's just because there's an amount of, for lack of a better word, intimacy or just an understanding of good faith being there, right? So
okay.
I think it's very natural to talk differently in different social circles. It doesn't mean you're a chameleon or you're a sociopath. It just means that you understand social norms and you act within them.
Okay. How about you, Hafiz? Do you find yourself talking to differently if the audience is, let's just say, a group of male friends or a group of female friends? So let's put it on the scale of friends. Because yes, different circumstances and different relationships. There's a business relationship, there's a friend relationship. Obviously, you talk differently no matter whether it's male or female in those circumstances. But let's just say it's a group of friends. You got a group of male friends and a group of female friends. You find yourself talking differently to the two groups.
Chances are, if these two groups are together in the same area, no, not usually. I mean, I would say that the girls that are friends of mine that would be hanging around with guys that are friends of mine would already be used to that kind of lingo we have. But I would say this, that if it was just the guys, like on a Vegas trip or, you know, just doing a guys' night or something like that, it would change a little bit. It might be a little bit more macho and a little bit more jabby and whatnot, but yeah, there is a slight difference there. Now, if I was in a group of just women, I would not talk like I would to my guy friends. It would be completely different.
How so?
I don't think I would joke around and jab at my friends that are women as much as I do with my friends that are guys.
Okay, interesting. How about you, Andy? Different posture verbally when you're talking to a group of guys or a group of girls that are friends?
Oh, I'm just laying on the couch of privilege. It is just so much fun being a homosexual these days. I just love it. The things I can do with women that a man never could.
Well, let's clarify. You are a man. I mean, you are a man. Just because you're gay doesn't mean you're a man.
I got tits like tomato cans, baby. I've been eating too much. But you know what? I'll tell you something. I talk to women just as vulgar as I talk to men. Whenever I'm with either one, they want me to kind of make them laugh, right? So, so I'm doing what I do. But I will say, though, before, like, you know, years ago, like in high school, I definitely talked to men a lot different than I talked to women. With women, you know, we would just gab about dudes. Whereas with men, it was like definitely a way more, like I felt more anxiety of having to like be a little more aggressive, talk a little bit.
So you're saying that you probably put on more of an act when you were with guys in high school than you were when you were with girls. You were more natural and comforting with females.
Oh, 100%. And also I noticed like some of my guy friends that, you know, we'll hang out. There's like six girls and it's me and my other guy friends. They'll be way more sensitive when it's, you know, when they're in that situation. But when it's just me in a group with like six other guys, the guys are just like, no, my dick's bigger. No, my dick's bigger. It's just like, it's a big,
you know, we should point out for people that the guys don't actually say their dick is bigger. They say comments which are to lead you to believe that their dick is bigger.
Yes.
You
know? it's all about the verbal expression that basically is, hey, I said this, and because I said this, my dick is bigger.
That's right.
Either way, I'm just sitting there waiting for them to whip them out so I can see who's
all right.
But anyway.
Interesting that you said that being gay gives you a greater license to say things in you know, to women and men than you could say if you were straight.
Well, you know what, sign of the times too. I mean, things really do change, right? So it's like, you know, I mean, that's a privilege that some people have, but you also have to be careful with it too, right? Because again, you don't, I mean, gay men are just as equally culpable of harassing women as straight men are, you know? So I mean, I definitely think that, yeah, I'm in this really cool spot where I can kind of code switch really easily because I kind of had to, right?
Yeah.
You know, to be true to myself, I needed to be, I was more feminine, but then I had to code switch and be more masculine. So I'm kind of have that in me, that duality. But no, you have to be responsible, of course, with what you say and do.
Okay. Chris, how about you? Different, do you find yourself talking differently to men and women when they're groups of friends?
Yeah, so first off, I'd like to start by saying that my dick is average, but manscaped and perfectly cylindrical.
Wow, anyways, that's way too much information.
Okay, totally. I'm that type of guy. But
why not?
I might definitely like razz a male friend about, you know, something that might come across, if they weren't my friend, it might come across brutally as an insult. Like, for example, I live in a house with a guy who eats nothing but Kraft dinner. And so I razz him about that. And if it was, you know, maybe a female friend, I'd just be like, oh, that looks really good. You know,
why don't you teach me how to make that? Are you being more sincere with your male friend than you would be with a female friend? Is that what you're saying? Or
I don't know if it's sincerity or not. It's like some aspect of equality versus chivalry for me. Like I was brought up in, by baby boomers, and I did learn some sort of chivalry growing up. And I just, you know, I hold doors for women, whereas I wouldn't hold them for men. I'm a little bit more polite. I don't swear around women, and that's just how I was brought up. So I don't know if it's, obviously, I guess it is, you know, treat a double standard a little bit, but I don't really think of it too much like that. It's not like I view women as less or different. It's just that I was brought up in a household where we spoke differently around women, and that's all there is to it. Okay. And I might say, if I'm hanging out with some male friends, I might say something like, oh, I'm going to go take a dump right now or something like that. I'm certainly not going to drop that in a room full of women. What man would?
Well, as another man, I actually don't care to hear about that either. But that's just me. Aaron Seal, how about you?
Well, Stephen, I'm glad you brought up insinuations, because that's what my mind turns to when we cover this topic. And like, it's really rooted in the sense of community, whether it's women, men, or whether it's any other group, high school, as Hafiz raised, every community will naturally have certain different ways to insinuate the things we don't want to say explicitly, and those will evolve over time. And one thing that comes to mind for me in my experience, particularly in business and politics, is social dominance, sort of alpha dog behavior, because mm-hmm. In every community, people will start to muscle each other out verbally or just by indirect communication, because they're trying to gain some sort of power, privilege, or status. And as was alluded to, within men specifically, there's a variety of ways in which to insinuate someone else's subordination, wimpiness being one, weakness, sexual experience is another. So absolutely, communities have different sort of touch point sensitivities, and they come out in different ways.
It's interesting you talk about, how men talk about sexual experiences with themselves, with each other differently than they do with women. Usually that amounts to lying, especially in high school.
Well, that's the difference between men and women, because as we know, for men, being promiscuous is a good thing. For women, it's something that needs to be avoided. And if women amongst themselves are trying to communicate promiscuity, they don't dare do it explicitly. There are a variety of coded ways to do it, and they are just as vicious emotionally.
Yeah. Okay. What I'm wondering is, do we talk to women differently because they're women, or do we talk to them differently because we don't have the same shared life experiences with them that we assume we have with other men? What do you think, Mo?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think you're right that we do have different lived experiences, and that probably is why we talk differently. So you can rag on your friends for, you know, what they're wearing or how they look like when you meet up with them, but you're probably not going to do that even with a close female friend, to rag on someone's appearance or anything, even if you're, you know, good friends with them. So I think there is an ingrained cultural difference that we all process if we have filters, basically. And yeah, I think that there is a difference. We do sort of internalize that difference.
Okay, because obviously, you know, we have different lived experiences than women. And I think that I know from my point of view, there are certain things that I don't talk about in front of women, female friends, and not a lot of things.
What don't you talk about, Stephen?
Well, it's more a way of what I the way I'll approach a topic. Like, I don't like to be too coarse in front of women I don't know that well, I guess I would say. I think I actually talk much the same to men and women that I have the same kind of closeness with, because there are because of different lived experiences, there are different sensitivities that between men and women there's going to be, because we interface with the world so differently. I mean, I have, it's probably no different. I mean, we've got, you know, Hafiz and Mo are, and Aaron, members of, you know, minority communities, you could say, like I am. And certainly when I get together with people from my ethnic background, it's a completely different kind of code that we talk in. And, you know, there's a completely different kind of mode that we move in. Would you say that that's true, Hafiz, as well?
You know what? I would definitely agree. When you were talking about that, especially when you're talking about being in your own cultural group and whatnot, I do notice that as well. My girlfriend has mentioned to me too that, you know, I have a different tone, almost like a switch in accent sometimes with when I'm talking to, let's say, other Indian people, especially ones that I don't know. I think anyone that's from a different culture, when you interact with your other culture, your cultural norms for communication come in, that, and it's not something you think about. It's just something automatic where you just convert in. I've had friends that, you know, who my Persian friends, that they always change into a more controlled speak with you know, adult members and whatnot. I'm not, I shouldn't say adult, we're all adults now, but you know, they'd switch their tone into a more respectful tone with their
their elders
and people from the culture, right? So when you're in the larger group, you're a little bit more finished and polished, whereas when we're just the guys, you know, anything goes.
That's right. Yeah. Well, I guess also that when you're with, like, when you're with your own cultural group or you're with other guys,
yeah,
you have a greater sense of what the sensitivities are. And also you can say things that perhaps would be insensitive to say to another group, but the group that you're with knows you're part of them. So if you're making jokes about things that you share as an ethnicity or as a sex or gender, you have a license to say that because they know that you're not really making fun of it because you're part of it. Whereas somebody who's from outside the group, you know, it's the same way that black people can say the N-word, but white people can't, because you know that black people don't mean it because they're bigoted against black people. You never know when a white person says it, no matter the context.
When gay people have adopted over terms like the faggot word, you know, repurposing words that have been used against you. Like, I mean, I know Indian people, but reclaiming, have repurposed the word dipper a couple times too. You know what? It's something that's a modern phenomenon, I think, with repurposing words, or maybe it's an old one because it's always been something that the out group has done to take control over how they're seen. I think of times when we're in a stoner's blaze circle. And you're passing around a joint, and that lingo in that circle, no matter if it's male or female, it can be pretty different from, you know, someone that's in a normal situation that's not a bunch of stoners getting high, you know. Or that group of stoners that then goes back to class or the event or whatever, and then
I guess there's a lot less use of the word dude.
Well, no, there's very few uses of the word dude, but there's a lot of jokes and there's a lot of little jazz back and forth.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
I have and as I was mentioning, there's different understandings of sensitivities because of different lived experiences. I'm going to go first to Aaron, and then I go around the horn. What do you think are the different sensitivities that men have as opposed to women, or that women have as opposed to men? What are some areas of discussion where there's greater sensitivity for men or for women?
Well, one of them is profanity. I think men, and I think this has been mentioned already, men instinctively assume amongst each other, my experience in business and politics, it is that profanity as a means of communicating magnitude of impressing the impact of what you're saying is socially acceptable. Now, I think this is changing over time, certainly in the workplaces that I've been part of, at least with the women I've worked with. They want to be treated equally in every sense of the word. So it's like, don't treat me with kid gloves. Use whatever words and frankly, make your point. Don't try to beat around the bush and then haunt yourself and everybody around for not having communicated your message clearly. Just say what you mean. But in some circles and in some settings, whether justified or otherwise, I think there is a tendency among men to be blunter and more impactful than sometimes they are in women-men settings.
Well, that certainly doesn't apply to my wife. She's blunt in both circumstances.
And that's what I mean. Like, I think it depends on the individual, but there are cultural there are moments when I've felt this instinct.
I guess I should say she's not blunt, she's honest. And she applies that honesty differently with different groups and in different ways. But what about you, Chris? Different sensitivities that you can think of between male and female groups?
I would say that this may just be my preconceived notion of it, but with females, sex may be a more sensitive topic just due to the fact that women in our society here are more sexualized. And so it might be more sensitive of a topic just due to how it's portrayed by the mainstream media and the female body image being a point of a soft spot for many women out there. So I would say sex is a little bit of one of those areas I wouldn't get into right away upon first meeting a woman. Whereas with male friends, I'm more than happy to discuss the topic, but. With women,
even male friends you've just met and you don't know where they stand on things, you would still feel more comfortable talking about sex with almost a virtual stranger than you would with a female friend?
I would say much more likely, but it's not going to be, hi, I'm Chris, I like sex. It's not like the first thing I'm going to say when I walk up. But yeah,
well, it's
I would
kind
say
of assumed
more.
Anyway. Everybody does, right? I mean, we all got here one way or another, and that was sex.
That's Donald Trump and Billy Bush territory right there.
Well, what about you, Andy? Do you find that there's things, I know you already said that you tend to be, approach friends the same way, whether they're male or female, and that you have a greater degree of license talking to females being a gay man. But do you find there's areas you won't tread as comfortably when you're talking to a group of female friends versus male friends?
Well, first, let me just say this. If you ever saw me in the workplace, like at a studio or a station or whatever it is that I'm doing at work, you would be startled. You would not think it's me because I am one of the most quiet, focused people ever that's focused on my work. And with men and women in the workplace, I have nothing to talk to them about but work. So it's not social, it's work. But in my social life, it's a lot different. Yeah. I think all people are kind of freaked out about things that invalidate them and that make them feel weak. So for straight men, it's definitely when I talk about gay sex, it freaks them out. They say, that's gross. I don't want to hear that. And I'm like, okay, well, then why do I have to hear about you having sex? Like, why is it any different? So I think, yeah, it scares them. It scares them that, I'm aware of myself. I'm okay with myself. And it freaks them out that they're maybe not okay with it. I think with women, though, they're a little bit more open. But again, I think things that invalidate them or make them feel weak are things that are taboo. So, I think definitely talking about sex. I mean, it really comes down to sex. It's a very big colonial taboo. So, I think sex is a big freaky place to be, and that's also why let's not talk about the stuff in the workplace because Kyla Lee and Paul Doroshenko come flying in. So, yeah.
Okay. What about you, Mo? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, I think, appearance is one where you can kind of talk to your guys or rip on your guys' outfits or clothing or how they look, and it's sort of taken in good jest, whereas you probably wouldn't do that with your closest female friends. But to flip the question a little bit, I actually think it can be harder to talk about emotions with guys. So if you're feeling down, if you can sense that your friend is feeling down, your guy friend is feeling down, sometimes getting into that can actually be a lot more of a challenge, and guys can be a lot more closed off to each other
and dismissive
than females. I think with females,
I think that
with women,
just
in general, it's easier to talk about emotions for whatever reason.
Well, because you're not judged. You're not judged the same way. You're not judged by the same paradigm of masculinity by women as you are by other men. And I sometimes feel like you don't want to talk about your feelings with the other guy, and the other guy doesn't want you to talk about your feelings with him either, because we've not really been raised, at least my generation, weren't really raised with that sense of comfort amongst men talking about feelings. What I found, though, as I get older, is when I talk to friends I've been friends with for years, and I talk about things that perhaps make me feel more vulnerable that I wouldn't have talked about with the guy friends in the past, I find that they then reflect back to me that they've had very much the same experiences or something very similar. Mm. And there's no judgment anymore. Like, sort of drop, I think as you get older, you tend to, if you're smart, drop the bullshit. But that the bullshit brings me to another question. Do you find yourself somehow posturing when you're with other men, saying things that aren't really you, but you feel you need to say because you're or ribbing people and stuff, or being more vigorous in your ribbing because you're with a bunch of guys? Do you feel that there's any sort of invisible pressure, not so much peer pressure, because I'm not saying that they're asking you to act that way, but there's this invisible societal pressure and expectation to perform as male. What do you think, Hafiz?
You know what? I was actually just thinking of this as you're talking about it. And the way I think of it is like when it's a group of guys together, it's almost like a Klingon sort of measuring contest. Like it's like a
rap battle almost.
Yeah, exactly. There, with certain groups of friends that I have, like there's always a thing that you're always on guard and ready for that verbal shot, and you always have to be ready with a verbal shot as well, and you know you have to be quick on the thought on your comebacks as well, and you know that if something funny were to happen, you're gonna get razzed for it, and you have to be able to laugh it off, and if you show any emotion, you're gonna get razzed even more. And you know, for someone that didn't grow up in North American society, this whole system that a lot of North American guys do have was a little bit hard to adapt to. And it was interesting because I noticed that in other societies, men have a different type of friendship sometimes.
Explain that. I'm curious.
Okay, so if you go to India or Pakistan, you will see men holding hands.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, and yeah. Like, Arab countries as well.
Yeah. Okay. So the close-knit bond of two men is far deeper in those cultures because they don't associate with women that they don't know, right? They'll associate with their mother, but their day-to-day conversation and their friendships and their social circle is around their men friends, and so they're very close to each other. They talk about their emotions and whatnot in certain ways, things that they have, you know, in their life that are bothering them, and they're close enough to a point of friendship where they'll hold hands, just like two girls that are friends that would hold hands over here.
I think you see a lot of women from Chinese backgrounds will hold hands and don't think anything of it. Is masculinity defined differently then in Indian and Pakistani cultures in the sense that you were just mentioning from the way it is in North America?
Well, there's some universals and then it is defined differently. Of course, I mean, masculinity in terms of the machismo-ness, if you look at the media in India and if you compare it to here, it's the same stuff, you know, the action movie machismo type of guy. But in terms of the cultural norms of how two men can be friends with each other, yeah, that is different in multiple cultures, not just ours versus North Americans. But if you went to, I'm sure, South Korea and you compared that, that would be somewhat different. If you went to Europe, that would be somewhat different.
Okay. How about you, Aaron? Do you ever find yourself posturing and more or less perform, rather than being more comfortable, you're performing as a male as opposed to being who you are?
Well, absolutely. It's like that's all politics is presenting a brand. But when I go to posturing within gender communities, my first instinct is the implicit, the more subtle, the unspoken. And I see it played differently for women and men. And for women, what I think about is brand posturing, because a lot of the time, like the money that women spend on brands, they'll say they like the bag or the shoes, but really they want the validation that comes from their peer community from wearing the thing that is supposedly prized, however overpriced it may be. But there's a more insinuous one, a really nasty one that comes to mind, especially from my experience on Parliament Hill, unfortunately, with it, which is, and I'll say it bluntly, peacocking through the trophy wife. And it's not always a wife. Sometimes it's a girlfriend. But it is a tragic fact of masculinity that men are judged by the woman that is on their side. And it's not complimentary to the women, to the woman. And it's often not complimentary to the man either. And I think that's where you sometimes get unhealthy relationships, where the man is getting into it not because he actually cares about the other person, but because he likes the social standing that having her next to him will bring. And I've seen this one too many times, and I can count it.
So the woman is reduced to a prop at that point in time.
Trophy wife syndrome.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, it's a prop. Interesting. Chris, how about you? I think that you probably, what you were discussing earlier, being brought up in a certain way, and men talk a certain way to men and talk to women. Do you ever find yourself not behaving as not you, but in some ways performing as male?
Yeah, the hip hop community, I mean, it's very braggadocio based, and so when I'm doing hip hop related things, it's all about who rocked the bigger show, or you know, who's got the most album sales, or whatever it may be, whose fan base is bigger, things like that. But I'm also part of, so the peacocking comes into play definitely on that level, but I'm also in a unique position. I'm also in the recovery community, meaning I am a recovering alcoholic. And so I do attend like 12-step fellowship meetings where it's commonplace for men to speak about their feelings. So I go from like one world right into another, but I don't generally see too much crossover between each. If that makes sense. So I have no problem expressing my feelings to other men, but I would certainly not do that within the hip hop community. So just like it's different with different cultures geographically, it's also different here within different niche demographics. So it's not like I'm not going to be myself. It's not like I'm acting a role or anything like that. But just, you know, just associating with people at the level they're at and what they're comfortable with.
Okay. Do you think, I know, Stephen, you usually ask questions here, but I just want to throw it out there. Do you think as hip hop's changing, with guys like Lil Nas X and whatnot coming in, do you think that culture is going to change within it, with men and how they talk to each other?
It is a lot different than it used to be. Like back in the 90s, it was, you know, all about who had the biggest chain and things like that. And then in comes ASAP Rocky wearing a dress in like interviews and stuff like that. And it totally changed the game. And like, I totally appreciate the change and the times changing and becoming a little bit different. But I don't know. I can't say. I can only say how it is here and how I perceive it. And in Canada, you know, I'm kind of stuck in a time warp. I grew up, you know, with 90s hip hop and stuff like that. So to me, that's still what I listen to a lot of the time. So I'm not going to really speak on the new school guys. But it is what it is, and it will change how it changes.
Yeah, you know why I usually ask the questions, Hafiz? Because I ask questions that are on topic.
That's sort of on topic.
Yeah, on a tangent.
You want to get us started on tangents.
Now we're talking about, we're doing a music show all of a sudden. Mo, do you ever find yourself performing as male and are aware of it?
Yeah, probably. I find actually myself performing in a male context or a genderized context more when I don't know the people, to be honest. I think with close friends, I feel very comfortable being myself, and that braggadocious side might go away. But I definitely feel like sometimes when you're in a new group, you're trying to assert yourself and your personality. And that's probably where I feel a little more performative, when I just don't know that many people or I'm meeting people.
Okay. I mean, for myself, I find that and I realize now that this is possibly patronizing, but it's just the way that I was raised, that when we were doing Ed's night party and we had the hot tub and we had the dancers and stuff, and they were all very scantily clad, but I felt towards them as if they were younger family members, and I was exceptionally polite and everything around them, just because the thought would be that you don't want them to feel the least bit uncomfortable or, you know, insecure about what they're wearing and stuff like that. Not that any of them were, they were all very confident, and this was probably just my burden, not theirs. But I felt I always looked them straight in the eye, never looked them anywhere else, and felt very protective towards them. And that's probably a patronizing male attitude, and it's not, it's bad and good at the same time, in the sense that I should treat them like I treat anybody else. But I, you know, if there was a guy wearing, you know, like a banana hammock around me, I'd probably make a joke about it. But I wouldn't do that to these women because I didn't want to make them uncomfortable. I didn't want to make them feel demeaned in any way. So in that, it is patronizing. But at the same time, maybe that's just, it was a professional bearing more than anything.
But Stephen, you're also their boss, right? Like, doesn't that create that sense of professionalism as well?
Yeah. I mean, there's that. That's why, you know, when all this Me Too stuff started, I didn't have any worries. Cause I know that I, even though there were women that were topless and stuff around me, whatever, I never, ever, treated them differently or ogled them or anything, but I felt protective, I guess, because I was the boss. I felt protective. They were my people, you know? And that's sort of built into me. And there are times that I, amongst female friends, I will talk the exact same way I talk to male friends. But if I don't know them as well, I don't know I'm at the age now where I don't give a shit. I am who I am because I'm not actually intending to offend or be offensive or anything around men or women. But I think there was a time when I did feel like there's things I can't say around women. And certainly talking about sex is one of them, but I've been married for over 20 years. What's to talk about? Here's what I wonder. Have you guys ever been with other guys, they kid around with you, something they said actually hurt or stung, but you didn't show it because that was just the wrong, you just don't do that, but it landed. And it's something that maybe you carry with you a little bit afterwards. That ever happened to you, Andy? Andy?
Hi, Andy. Sorry, I had myself on. I muted myself. I'm so sorry.
I was picturing you across the road at that cheeseburger place.
Well, luckily it's closed, so you don't have that problem. Oh, that's right. But I do. Okay. Unfortunately, I'm bearing the burden of that problem. I had, you know what? I don't know if it had to do. I'll always remember this one moment, and I don't know if it has to do with just the relationship with the man or this or that or whatever. But I asked this guy about my boss, actually. At the store that I used to work at, I asked him about this book reading he went to because his friend had published a book and blah, blah, blah. And he said, you know, it's a little academic. I don't really think you'd really appreciate it or understand it. And when he said that, it really hit me hard. And this is before I went to university 4 years ago. So it just like, it really hurt me that he thought I was stupid or that, you know, something
shallow.
That could be,
yeah.
Yeah. Or say, yeah. Or something that could be deeply intellectual could also be something that I wouldn't appreciate. So that really bothered me. And I'll always remember that.
Well, that's a dick move. Him saying it was a dick move. Being two new men, you can't really say anything about it because we're sort of socialized to not say, that really upset me. Or, that hurt me, because then the guy doesn't know what to do either, because we're so not raised to do that. You know, it's uncomfortable for everybody. So we avoid that lack of comfort, even if it means we don't get to resolve this feeling.
Well, and the big thing is it's you know, everything's about like a performance of power. So my thing was like, I don't want to show him that I'm upset, because then it's going to show that he really got to me. And, you know, I mean, let's talk about business. When you're working in business at any sort of level, especially a high level, you have to monitor how you present yourself to other people. Because if you don't, I mean, you're going to get eaten alive. So, yeah.
Okay, but
I mean,
good point. Good.
Lucky for me, I've never really given a shit.
Okay. Well, all right. How about you, Chris? You ever been kidding around with the guys and they kidded back and something landed, but you didn't say anything about it or show it at all, because we just don't do that when we're hitting with each other, even if they didn't mean anything by it. And they would probably like to know not to go there again if you told them, but you just don't.
Yeah, more so than when we were kidding around or anything like that. I was out on tour. It was my first big tour, and it was with as an opening artist for a relatively large hip-hop artist. And he made a little jab at me one time. He said, oh, well, why couldn't this other dude, Danny, make it out on tour? And it was kind of implying that I wasn't up to skill level yet to even be touring on a tour at that level with that many fans in the audience and that sort of thing. And that hurt, and I always wish that I had said something. He was implying that this other hip-hop artist that had toured with him previously probably should have taken my spot on the tour, because I wasn't really up to par and probably had no reason to be touring at that time, as it was my first one. I was just getting started. And yeah, it stung big time. I didn't let it go I think I'm still irked by that a little bit and wish that I had said something about it. I should have stood up for myself, but just because, you know, it's his tour and I'm the opening act, I kind of kept my mouth shut and just slunk off in shame, like one of those Charlie Brown moments. But yeah, it stung for sure, and I didn't say anything about it.
Okay. What about you, Aaron? Has this ever happened to you?
Well, the story that comes to mind for me actually goes in the other direction, where I said something when I was hurt by a supervisor and in retrospect very much shouldn't have. And it's a very prominent story. Of my 8 years in government, 3.5 were with former Minister Flaherty, may he rest in peace. 2.5 of those were wonderful years, but the last one was hard. And what happened with me personally was there was a briefing note on one January morning where the minister, you can imagine he was in a very foul mood for any number of a variety of reasons. For whatever reason, he saw fit to take it out on me. I was the director of policy. I'd prepared the briefings for the day, and he decided to verbally tear them to shreds. The problem in retrospect was I should have realized what his intention was. He was just in a very bad mood and was venting to another guy, as is a reasonable thing in the abstract to do. But I took it personally and I defended my work, which was not what he was looking for. And it soured my relationship for the entire year to come. I don't think he'd ever admit that that was the cause. But in retrospect, I can pinpoint that as the moment my relationship with him soured.
Interesting. Okay. What about you, Mo?
Yeah, I got an interesting story. It doesn't involve me personally, but it was around a fantasy football league. And basically, there was a core group of guys that knew each other very well. There was like five of us, and there was a sixth guy that was a sort of a tertiary friend who was on the outside. And we were all part of the same group chat. The tertiary friend, you know, kind of saw the ribbing, you know, made well with the group. But one of the guys, his cat died. And we all know that this guy in particular, the cat guy, he was very close to his cats, and that was a very sore point for him. You never really made fun of him and his cats. And so he said, hey guys, I'm out for today or whatever. And the tertiary friend, the guy that wasn't really in the group, you know, called him a pussy and said, oh, you fucking pussy, like, fuck your cats, just like, you know, get in here. And the guy whose cats died took that extremely hard, and
well,
all of us knew
that was
that
a
that
dick
wasn't
move.
The type of, yeah, it was a dick move, but I think we were also dicks to each other, and it didn't dawn upon the other guy, who's not a dick by nature, but it just dawned upon him that was really hurtful and would be especially hurtful to this person. So
the tertiary friend really didn't understand where the line was.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think they saw other things where we were calling each other pussies or names or whatever, and they didn't see the difference. And, you know, it led to a big blowout where the guy who lost his cats privately emailed this other guy and was very upset. And the other guy was very confused, like, oh, I thought we talked to each other like this all the time. And we kind of had to explain, like, well, you know, if you knew him, you knew that he was not going to take that very lightly. And you know, I have sympathies for both sides. You know, there was one person who just didn't see the line, and there was another. And for all the rest of us, it was internalized that was something that you didn't say to this person.
Well, I have sympathy for one side there, the guy with the cats, because I can relate. And
sure.
I guess what this means is that even when we're ribbing each other as guys, when we know each other, we understand the rhythms, and we understand that there is a line, that hitting each other, it should stay kidding. We should know each other well enough to know what the sensitivities are and maybe sort of what somebody's life experience has been. And you don't want to make a comment that is going to actually offend somebody. We're kidding each other. It's a male way of bonding and showing affection. But it's not intended to actually humiliate anybody or make somebody feel bad. Yet if it does, very often we stay silent about it, because more humiliating than feeling humiliated or something by a comment is to actually tell somebody you were humiliated, at least in, you know, in many circumstances, I would think. Would you agree with that, Chris?
Yeah. I mean, for the self-esteem and stuff like that, it's better to get it off your chest right away, and then you don't build resentments about it. That's what I find. So yeah, I would like to rectify comments that hurt my feelings. Like, somebody called me a pussy because my cat died, I would have to say something, or else I would stew about it all day, and probably it would well up inside me, and then I'd blow up at them rather than just having a calm conversation to let them know how I felt about it.
Well, that's actually more healthy, because you know, the suicide rate amongst men is very high. And I mean, the more you go into the sort of macho sports arena, the more you'll see that there are a lot of mental illness, and there's a lot of hurts that guys who are very, you know, in that macho arena nurse until they can't, because they're not allowed to cry uncle, because that's just not, you know, you lose your standing as, you know, a member of that macho athletic community. It's changing, and for the better, but you just think of all the high profile athletes that have killed themselves because they reaching out for help or saying something bothered them wasn't done in that circle, and so they carry it around, and we carry it around inside ourselves like it's a poison, it's a cancer, and eventually it may hurt our self-esteem, and we might not even remember where it came from, but it grows and it festers. And that's why I'm glad you say, Chris, that you would say something. Certainly in a situation like that, I would say something too, but I think we've all been in situations where we're not sure that it actually reaches that level, but it's still something that it bothers us, but we recognize if we say something, it may upset the entire chemistry of the group. And like Aaron's experience may change the tenor of the relationship. And so we err on the side of caution in the sense that we don't say anything, but is it really the sense of caution? Because, you know, the most cautious thing to do for your own health is to say something, but we don't. I think it's changing. Andy, you think it's changing?
I think so. And actually, you know, I just want to give a little bit of hope to some people. And another story that I have, and it's really brief. I used to sit on this board, and there was five lawyers. They're all 50 or 60 years old, and a few academics that were on it. And I remember they were talking, and I was new to this board. I had no clue what any of the abbreviations were. And so at one point I stopped and said, can you tell me what this abbreviation means? And they all looked at each other like it was the grossest thing for me to even ask that. And one person rolled their eyes. They said it means X, Y, Z. And I said, thank you. And then we just kept going. So I think, you know, whether you're a man or a woman in the workplace, if you feel like there's something you don't know, don't be afraid to ask, and don't be afraid to just take it and don't let that stuff faze you. I think it's just really important, because I think women, especially in the workplace, they feel scared to raise their hand and ask a question. And maybe men too, I don't know.
If I can jump in on acronyms specifically, having worked in government, acronyms are, we were talking earlier about hidden codes within genders. In the workplace, doesn't matter genders, acronyms are a way to intimidate people. So on those specifically, you were absolutely right to ask the question. Government creates acronyms all over the place where they're not necessary, and all they do is obscure the conversation. So on that specifically, absolutely ask the question.
I think you feel passionately about that, don't you?
People in tech too. There's a reason there's a lot of acronyms in tech. It's to confuse people.
You think acronyms are intended as barriers?
Well, look, sometimes it's not really hard to say things like search engine optimization, but we say SEO, right?
Tech guy, you could say search engine optimization or SEO. I would have the same reaction, which is, okay, I've heard it before. I don't really know what it is. You can say the whole words and you can say the acronym and it wouldn't make a difference to me. I'd still feel like, okay, I still only have a slight understanding of it.
So there'll be a term that you do know, like something like SEO, but then there might be another one that you don't. And sometimes, you know, I've been in places where tech guys will just throw out a bunch of acronyms just to make themselves sound smarter to the client. And it's kind of like a power move, I think, with some tech people, because that's their line of strength, right? They don't always come across as tougher or anything like that. They have their fucking acronyms, though.
And you see the same thing in academia as well. It's this use of like overly quote unquote technical language or language that can very much be simplified, but it's used to create barriers or to, you know, sound smarter than you actually are. I think it's a very common practice.
Okay. Final question. Have you ever been amongst a group of guys and it wasn't an insult to you or whatever, but you heard something that you found that you thought you just weren't comfortable hearing and you said something? And if so, what did it do to you? I'll give you an example. Is you know, my association with Ed the Sock, which was seen by many as sort of a hyper-masculine character, at least at one point did. And so guys naturally assumed that I would be interested in hearing them talk about women in certain ways. And so a woman would walk by, basically we're at a business function, and a female colleague was talking to us, and she walked away, and somebody said, "Look at the ass on her." And I said, "That's not." I just immediately said, "That's not appropriate. That's our coworker. You just talked to her like she was a person, and then when she turned her back, she becomes a piece of meat." And everybody was sort of shocked that I said that. And ever, you know, from that point on, they never spoke that way around me again. I'd like to think that that was just somebody trying to puff themselves up and thinking that they would get approval from the group. When they got disapproval, I never heard it again. Found yourselves in that circumstance? Sorry, go ahead.
The question is, do you think they would have talked amongst themselves without you there like that?
I don't know. I sometimes think that insecure men try to find security amongst other men in talking in ways that they think is the accepted male performance. And soon as somebody tells them that's not acceptable, they don't feel the pressure to do it anymore. I don't think that's necessarily the way that comment, I don't think it was necessarily this person's real feelings. I think they felt that it was like they had to say it to assert their masculinity within the group. And once that was shut down as not being an alpha behavior, they just didn't feel the need to posture that way anymore. Certainly not around me. You guys ever experienced anything like that? How about you, Mo?
Yeah, I've basically had the very same experience in a yoga class. So as you know, yoga studios develop their own communities, and you see the same people over and over again. And one of the guys who was a regular there, you know, me and him became friendly, and then suddenly he started making very, you know, those same types of comments of like, "Oh my God, check out the ass on that one or that." And I literally was like, "Dude, chill out, man." Like,
yeah.
One, because, you know, that's, I don't want to be the creepy guy in yoga who's doing that. And then also a lot of these people that he was referring to were friends of mine. There were people that I'd see on the regular.
Right.
And so I didn't feel right about it.
I'm pretty sure people could hear you. Like, everyone could probably hear you. It's a yoga class.
Well, it would be before class, like while you're setting up and there's a little bit of noise or whatever. And so, you know, he would make those comments. And I think when I stopped him and I was like, "Dude, like, chill out on that." He was taken aback by it. I think he almost seemed offended. He didn't say as much, but he definitely stopped, at least with me. But he did. I got the vibe that he was almost offended that I stopped him.
Interesting. Was he offended or was he embarrassed?
It might have been a mix of both. Yeah. I mean, this is also a guy that he had like two strikes against him for certain types of behavior as well.
So, oh, all right. So this is
which I found lifer. Out afterwards. Yeah. Which made sense. Yeah.
What about you, Chris? Have you experienced anything like that?
Yeah. So, I mean, like, it's hard to not notice the beauty of a woman. And while amongst friends, I might make a comment on a woman's like overall beauty, I'm not going to get as specific to mention, you know, like what the booty looks like or anything like that. But
yeah,
I have an experience where a friend of mine in the recovery community here, he was talking about going to the gym, and he had seen one of our friends from recovery at the gym and mentioned, you know, she was looking pretty fine or whatever. Then he just started randomly insulting her intelligence, like, "Oh yeah, with a body like that, she must not have much of a brain." And yeah, I did feel like uncomfortable and just thought a lot less of him after that, because she was a better friend than he was to me. And unfortunately, I didn't say anything. And yeah, I would guess that comes down to the, like, I don't even know why I wouldn't, but because
why do you think you didn't say anything?
Just like peacocking, I guess, like, you know, this person's going to think less of me just because I'm not thinking about her on the same level or something like that. And felt like a little bit of a tool afterwards. I think that I spoke up and just said, "Oh, you know, like, I think she's, you know, reasonably intelligent," or something like that. But I should have shut him down on it. And thought about it a lot afterwards.
Isn't that interesting? You were afraid of seeming like you just said something inappropriate when in fact they said something inappropriate.
Totally, yeah, for sure.
Okay. What about you, Andy?
I was going to say gay burn alert, because like us gays, we are just, we're programmed to read the hell out of people. I would have said, good thing you're ugly, because you, at least you're smart, you know what I mean, or something like that. Anyways, I would say
to the
that,
guy.
Yeah, I would have said that to him. I mean, Jesus.
Yeah.
But I think really you can't be everywhere at once. So you just got to worry about where you are and who you are. And I think what you did, Stephen, is remarkable. I think that takes a lot of gumption to say something like that, especially in a workplace. It's not an area to make it into a crusade or, you know, a big burn or anything like that to someone. But just to say something, if you see it, you should say it. I think the big thing is creating your own personal boundaries and just understanding the culture that you want to be in and the culture you want to create. So just being very mindful of what you do not find appropriate and making sure you set up those boundaries with people so that way they don't cross them.
Okay. You know what? It's probably a good place to end, because that was a very profound statement there. Well done, Andy. I'm glad you weren't here getting a cheeseburger.
Honey, I'm so beautiful. I use up all my brain cells.
All right. I want to thank everybody for being part of this show. I think that it's probably amazing to many women who discover this show to hear the way men who are, listen, none of us are effeminate. And even though, Andy, you said you perform as feminine or something at times, or you're not effeminate. You're very clearly a man. I mean, you're very clearly, you use your male privilege well.
Thank you.
So I think none of us are the kind to be overly sensitive, yet here we are talking about something that I think the women in general would figure, when guys get together and talk about stuff like this, the conversation goes in a very different direction. So I think we're almost performing a public service in the battle of the sexes, in the sense that if women are listening to this, they're like, wow, the average guy probably doesn't think the things that the really bad examples of guys do. Hafiz, another well put together show. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
All right. Hafiz Noorani is a digital marketing consultant and analyst, and he's working with us. He's done a very, very good job. He is on Twitter at Feezy Does It. Mo Amir is a writer and a broadcaster and a podcaster with his This Is Van Color podcast. Very informative, insightful, and fun podcast.
One of the best podcasts in Canada, I'd say.
That's right.
Now.
And Mo,
you guys are too sweet.
Mo, your email address.
I'll throw out my Twitter instead. I'll throw it at Van Color.
Oh yeah, why did I say Twitter? Email address? What the hell's the matter with me? Jeez.
Mo,
what's your home address? Yeah, Mo, what's your home address? And when are you out of the house? Yeah, okay. At This Is Van Color. Thank you.
Yeah, slide into my DMs, but please don't spam my inbox.
Thank you. Okay. Chris Hamilton is a hip hop. How would I put it? What's the correct term, Chris?
You can just say an MC, hip hop artist. I'm also an engineer and producer. Any of the above.
Okay, he's all of those things. And where can people find you on Twitter?
I'm not on Twitter as much as I'm on Facebook, facebook.com/illtonesmusic, and also on YouTube. If you just type in ILLTONE, you'll find me there as well. And all over Spotify too.
This is sort of strange to me. You're a hip hop artist and you're more on Facebook, which is generally seen as a place for boomers to put up pictures of their grandchildren.
I love Facebook. I'm not a Twitter guy, to be honest with you, Stephen. So I just don't use it. Instagram, Facebook, Bandcamp, YouTube.
Okay, where do they find you on
Instagram? For so many platforms.
You're right. Where do they find you on Instagram?
Instagram.com/illtonesmusic as well.
Okay, thank you very much. Aaron Seal is a entrepreneur, somebody with a lot of political experience, a political advocate. Aaron, where can people find you?
Well, for now, it's cfusion.ca. So the letter C followed by fusion.ca is the project that we're working on right now. It's a set of DIY tools to make weed edible products at home, oils like you can buy on the shelf, and other products like alcohols and milks that you can't. So I am on my second canna latte right now. I don't know if you can hear it in my voice, but soon you'll be able to enjoy them too. Again, that's cfusion.ca.
Okay, thank you very much. Andrew Willis is on Andyland Radio. It's andylandradio.com, And what's your email address, Andy?
Press at andylineradio.com. You can fill it up. Everyone else does. Yeah. And actually, you know what? I'm starting a comedy night. As soon as COVID's over, we're going to be doing this really great comedy night called The Wrecking Crew. Yeah, you can check it on Vancouver if you're here. You can just go to thewreckingcrew.tv to see more.
Okay. So that, you're doing that when COVID's over. So sometime around mid-2023. all right. Thank you all for being here, and thank you guys out there for listening. If you enjoyed this program, consider supporting us. Patreon.com/FU Network TV, or if you don't want to subscribe, just do a one-time boost. We appreciate it. PayPal, you go to our email address, which is funetworktv@gmail.com. Help put some gas in the tank and keep us going. I'm Stephen Kersner. Thank you for listening to Mensplaining on FU Politics on Fun, the FU Network. For he's a jolly good fellow, for he's a jolly good fellow, for he's a jolly good fellow. Let's all say all of us. This is Fun, the FU Network.